Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Triangulation is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Triangulation with Tom Merritt and Leo Laporte. Episode 36, recorded January 10th, 2012. Bree Pettis. Triangulation is brought to you by Ford, featuring voice-activated Sync AppLink. Now you can control select smartphone apps with your voice, so you keep your hands on the wheel and your eyes on the road. Check it out in the 2012 Ford Fiesta and at Ford.com/triangulation. It's time for Triangulation, a special triangulation, because we've been trying to track this guy down for months. And finally, we realized we were all going to be in Vegas at the same time. Leo Laporte here, live from the Consumer Electronics Show 2012 in Las Vegas. Tom Merritt is with me, the second leg of the triangulation tripod.
Yeah.
And we've both been working a long day. You just did TNT. We did MacBreak Weekly. We did Windows Weekly. And I just got back from interviewing the CEO of Ford, Alan Mulally.
How is Alan?
Alan seems he acts like he remembers me. Every time.
He might actually.
I'm starting to think maybe he knows who I am. He gave me a big hug. He said, "How you been?" I said, "You've had a good year." He said, "So have you." There's somebody backstage going, "Say this."
It's going
he has
ear.
Two children. Yes. Anyway, I'm really thrilled to have Bree Pettis with us. I don't need to say much more than Bree Pettis. He is, one of the things I'm excited about is whenever we interview Bree, we talk about the MakerBot, we talk about 3D printing, but we don't get the backstory, and there's a lot to tell about Bree
and
Pettis.
I really feel like you are in an industry that is where computers were at the time of the Altair, at the time of the Heathkit, and this everybody loves to hear all those stories about like what Bill Gates and Steve Wozniak were at. This is the time that these stories are happening right now. That's what I think is pretty exciting.
Welcome, Bree Pettis. Good.
It's
to
a pleasure
you.
To be here. I mean, we're here at CES. We get to kind of hide away here and chat for
But time. You, this is your second or third year at CES?
This is our third year, and for the first 2 years, we were the only 3D printer company here. So we were both the first and the only for a while, and now the competition's firing up.
There are others.
There's another one here this year. Yeah.
Wow, that's great.
And they've got a machine that has the build area of our last machine. It's kind of nice to have a new machine.
You're one step ahead of the competition. It's a mixed bag. I feel the same way when I see competition. There's a lot of competition to cover CES this year more than ever before. And on the one hand, it validates us. But on the other hand, it's like, well, I kind of like to have having it all to ourselves.
Yeah, it says like, okay, we're here. There's more than us. That means it's an industry.
Right.
But then it's kind of like, wait. But we want it.
Oh, but this is our industry.
The original MakerBot really looked like an Apple One. It was wood. It felt handmade. This is the newest. It's called the Replicator, and it has the Apple II feel to it.
Yeah, we've kind of shifted from the Altair Apple One
stage. Right, right.
We're kind of like Apple 1.75 right now. Plus.
So what is new in the Replicator?
So the biggest thing is that you can make much bigger things, like the size of a loaf of bread.
Look what you brought.
Yeah.
There's a bunny.
We've got bunnies.
Now, kids, it looks like a blue chocolate bunny, but don't take a bite out of that. It is not.
You won't like how it tastes.
Yeah.
It wouldn't taste. It would taste like Legos.
That's what it's made out of, plastic?
Yeah. Same plastic that goes into Legos.
ABS.
Yeah.
ABS, okay.
And then we've got
Companion
cube.
That's huge.
This is great because this is made out of PLA. This is as tall as you can make it. You can actually make it, if I wanted to, I could probably get 1.5 companion cubes on the actual build surface. And this is made out of PLA, which is cool because it's biodegradable. It's a bioplastic, and it just shimmers all pretty.
You still wouldn't want to eat that one.
You could. It's made out of corn, right?
It's interesting when you actually make it. It has a smell like waffles because it's like corn syrup.
Mm.
Yeah. But once it cools down, all the waffle taste is gone.
So you're actually now making something in the MakerBot. It has two colors.
Yep.
How long you're going to make a cupcake?
Yeah, we're going to make a cupcake with frosting on it.
Excellent. And how long is that going to take?
We'll find out. We'll see how far we get. I bet it could be within the hour.
It takes that long.
Just after we tell everyone not to eat them, we make a cupcake.
Yeah, don't eat it. Don't take it on the...
don't take it through the TSA checkpoint. Exactly.
Let's go back in time to Bree Pettis, the strange 12-year-old. What were you like in sixth grade?
So I had an early experience, even younger than that, where I went to Boston, I think I was probably 7 or 8, to visit my Aunt Meredith and Uncle Joe. Yeah. And Uncle Joe had an interesting job. He would wake up every morning at 4 a.m., take his pickup truck, and he would bring me along, and we would go. He knew all the trash routes in Boston. And we would go, and we'd find all the good trash.
Nice.
And then he would fix it up during the week, and then he would sell it at a flea market. And during this week that I was visiting them, we picked up a bunch of broken bikes, and we made a bike together. And I think he probably did most of the work, but then he made me do the work again after I'd seen
him
do it.
Neat.
So I really felt like I made it. And I had this empowering experience of being like, I took the bike home, and I knew if it broke, like, I could handle it.
Right.
And that's how I got hooked. And because when you make something, you fix it. And when you fix something and when you make it, you get this rush of like, it's such a rush of satisfaction. It's just, I got hooked at an early age on that.
It's almost unexplainable, but I know what you mean, where you feel like there's no way I can do this. And then you have that moment where you're like, oh, well, that goes into that. And now it actually works. I made something happen. I made something work that didn't work before. It changed the universe.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So that's how I got hooked.
So you were a maker from early days.
Yeah, then
did
I got
you ever
those
get
201 kits from Radio Shack.
Oh, yeah, those are great.
Love those things. And Legos.
You never did digital then? You never got like became a computer nerd?
Well, then actually what happened is in 81, my parents, my dad had been working at Toledo Scale in Columbus, and he quit and started his own software company called Software Productions in 81.
Wow.
Making software for the Acorn, which is like an Australian computer.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It was an Apple clone, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the Commodore and the Apple II Plus, and making children's software. Alphabet Beast and Company was the ABC program, and Micro Mother Goose was the other one. And that ended up, after a few years, failing, unfortunately. But during that time, I actually, like, my heroes were these hackers. Because my dad couldn't, there were no programmers back then. You had to just find people who were, like, obsessive hackers. And so there were these guys, Randy and Daniel Chang, who would come over to our house, and they were 16 and 17, and I was only 10 or 11. But even though they were only 16 or 17, they were like, they were serious, like, gods. They were like adults who could, and they taught me how to, like, in wizardry, I could go in and change the hex codes to give myself a million gold pieces. And, like, I learned really, you know, I learned from them that, like, you can break it for your satisfaction.
Now, what kind of computer were you using
I was in an Apple II. We had an Apple II Plus and a Commodore.
Okay. And did you use did you have a Commodore with the floppy drive, the Apple with the floppy drive?
Yeah, we actually had dual floppy drives, so I could copy things from my friends back in the day.
There you go. Let's talk about hackery. I mean,
that was when it was okay, but that was before the Bill Gates
letter. Don't copy that floppy, Bree.
Hey,
knock that off. So, you go to college. What do you study?
Music, drama, and dance.
Of course.
Now, how do you go from the maker ethic, the ethos that you're talking about, and the computer hackery we've been talking about? It's, obviously, there was some other creative impulses going on leading into that as well.
Sure. So I got into, I went to college. I went to the Evergreen State College, which is in Washington State. And it's one of these great colleges where you can go and you don't have to pick a major. You can take whatever you want.
Yeah.
There's no grades, but you're evaluated, which is actually kind of harsher than grades. Because the teacher will write, like, he's a slacker, he never comes on time, and that kind of stuff. And that's kind of worse than a C+.
Yeah, a C is kind of faceless.
Yeah.
You can just sort of interpret it however
slacker
you want.
Slacker is universal language, yeah.
So I studied a bunch of different things there, psychology, mythology, and then I ended up getting it. And then I did Butoh dance, which is this kind of obscure Japanese dance form where you...
Do you flower yourself?
Flower yourself, and you might drool on stage.
Yeah, yeah.
And when I was done with that, I had like a month and a half before I graduated, so I did a puppet show, just for fun. And
You look like a puppet nerd. You really do.
I'm a total puppet nerd. And
there's a type. There's a specific type.
Then I got lucky, and I ended up working for Jim Henson's Creature Shop.
No!
So I ended up going over and making tea for the right people on Pinocchio with Martin Landau, and then from there went on to Snow White, A Tale of Horror with Sigourney Weaver.
That's pretty cool.
And then I worked pushing rubber gorilla technology farther than it had ever been pushed before.
What movie was that for?
Upper Buddy with Rene Russo.
So in the Creature Shop, what are you doing? This sounds really interesting. You're fabricating puppets?
Monkeys, yeah. So what we were working on, so they had just come off of Babe. So Babe the Pig, they'd
love
Babe
that movie.
The Pig.
Yeah.
And this next movie was Buddy, which was one of my jobs was I had to find everybody who was under 4 feet tall and bring them in and basically, you know, put them through the paces to see if they'd make a good gorilla.
Uh-huh.
And then we built mechanical heads that went over your head and then would control the eyes and the mouth and move it. And there would be a puppeteer. There'd be a performer who'd be moving the body and then a puppeteer moving all the mouth and stuff like that. And
did you do any of the puppetry or you were just doing the building?
I was so young then that I started out making tea and then I was like, and then I was doing everything else that nobody wanted to do. So they'd be like, okay, we need something that's flexible, you know, like aluminum wire that doesn't break but can act like a finger. Can you get that for us in 3 hours? And I'd go run around trying to find...
So you were just sort of a production assistant type.
I was a production assistant. Yeah. I was an assistant and I was doing production help and I was
basically
in a support role.
When they didn't know who else could do something, they're like, "Bree, go do."
I did some puppetry, but it was like, "Move the toe, move the toe."
When I say go, move the toe.
When I came back to Seattle home, I ended up starting a puppet company and doing lots of puppet stuff. Shadow puppets, hand puppets, marionettes, more traditional stuff.
But the Budo training must have been useful, too, because that's all about movement. And
it's about being present.
Right.
Which is
right,
part of the whole thing about performing is actually being there. And
I could see that creative performance dance track and your maker ethos really meeting up and doing great stuff at puppetry. That's kind of a cross point for them.
I ran this thing called Night of the Puppet Master in Seattle, which was puppets for adults at and it was a midnight show. And all those guys, all the entire Wizards of the Coast crew was in Seattle, would come to this event.
Magic the Gathering.
Wrecked. And we would do puppet shows for adults. That was fun.
I wonder if puppets are like masks. You know, people do mask work because when you put a mask on, something kind of weird happens and you become... another person, another thing. It brings up all sorts of primal stuff. I would bet the puppets are just the same.
You know, if you ever want to have a crazy time, the Puppeteers of America, the puppet, which is a guild, you can go. They have every other year. They have a big festival, and puppeteers are intense because they create everything.
Right,
they're creating all the puppets, and then they become the puppets, and they tell a story with the puppets in a way. And for whatever reason, the audience decides that these things are real. And
that's right.
Can evoke emotion, and
it's magic.
There's a magic there.
It's a real sorcery. Yeah.
And when you get more than two puppeteers together and you start drinking, it's
you get Meet the Feebles.
It's intense.
Do you still do that? Do you still do the puppetry stuff?
You know, I'm looking. I just had a baby this last summer.
Congratulations!
And it's just the best thing ever. And I'm looking forward to doing puppet shows.
You'll be doing puppet
shows.
You will be. You absolutely will be. That's neat.
Yeah.
That's really, really
so
neat.
So you said you went back and started your own company.
Yeah.
How long did you do that? How did that fare?
So that didn't work out so well because it turns out having your own puppet company is not like I made like $6,000 a year for a few years, which is.
Yeah.
Doable when you're like early 20s, but hard.
No.
So then I went and became a school teacher. So I went back to school, got my teacher certificate, and taught medium and small children.
What
medium
topics?
And small, not large, no large.
I'm sorry, you have to be under this height to enter my family.
How long did you do that?
I did that for 7 years in Seattle. So
that's a joyous thing as well.
Oh yeah, it was great. I taught middle school kids, which is, I mean,
that's
I got a halo.
That's not little kids. That's
I taught in the tough schools too, so it was an adventure. You know, it's a little
all
bit
subjects.
What I ended up doing is because I did puppet shows. I ended up getting an art job, which is kind of a coveted job in schools. And because I had a K-8 degree and I could teach anything, they'd be like, okay, you get three classes of art and then one of science and one of reading. Mm. Go. Or math. You know, so I taught
literally
everything.
Talk about your split focus, though. Yeah.
Yeah.
And middle schoolers aren't so young that you don't have to know anything about what you're teaching.
You have to know something. You have to at least you have to either fake. You have to be a good
fake it really well,
or you got to actually know
it.
Yeah,
because they'll challenge you.
Or you have to be really upfront with them. Like, right. When I first started, I would just be like, okay, I just tried teaching you something, and I can tell you're not interested.
Right.
What would have made you interested?
Oh, that's good. And then, boy, I wish a teacher had done that to me. That's great.
Yeah, because then I'd go to the next class, because you teach the same thing over a few times, and I'd be like, so I taught this thing last class, and they hated it, so we're going to try something else.
That's pretty cool. That's really neat.
And kids appreciate that, when you're like, okay, let's be real.
Yeah, no.
And let's
teachers are never
that way.
We're
all in the same classroom together. Yeah. We all have to be there together. Yeah. Let's find a way to make this valuable for
them. They want to feel like they're being listened to.
They do.
And that's very
I bet you were some kid's favorite teacher. I bet you really. Now, so why did you stop though? After,
you know, it was one of those things where after 7 years,
it's
I was
grueling.
Making $31K.
Yeah.
And I wanted to eventually someday have a family.
Which yeah. After $6K probably felt like riches.
Yeah,
but that wears off.
Yeah, it's true actually. And I thought, okay, what do I do? And I was getting. I'd been trying every summer. I would make a go at becoming like a professional artist. And by the end of the summer, I hadn't made any money.
Right.
So.
Yeah, you think 31K is low.
Yeah, right? So I actually did this project called the I Love You Project, where I came to New York, and I went to this art gallery where there was DVD. There was a video artist. And I was like, it was like an underwater, like, painting experiment. And I was like, oh, yeah, this is pretty cool. I'd buy this. And I went to the front desk, and I was like, how do I buy this video art? And she was like, well, you buy a DVD. And she just looked at me and she was like, we know you're not one of us. And I was like, well, how much is it? And she was like, she said, you can't afford it. But she told me, she said, it's $15,000. And so I had one of those kind of Picasso moments where I was like, oh, I could make that. I could do that. So I went, I made a beautiful piece of art where I filmed people saying I love you, and it was a silent film, but you could tell what they were saying. And they'd say it over and over again for about a minute and a half. And it would just, when people say this, they're used to just saying it once, but then they say it over and over again. They would get overtaken by emotions.
Yeah.
It was good stuff.
Yeah.
And I took it, and I gave copies to all the art galleries, and they're like, this is great stuff. Thank you.
And where's my $15,000, dude?
After a few months, I was like, okay. That didn't work. So I'm putting this thing on the internet. And so this is back before. This is like.
Yeah, what year about is this?
I think this is end of 2003, early 2004.
Okay.
So I put it on the internet on archive.org.
Ah, nice.
Which is back where you put your videos back in the day.
We used to use it all the time. Yeah. That's, you know, it's free storage, free bandwidth,
So, and then after a few months, 40,000 people had watched that video.
Is it still on archive.org?
Yeah. And I was like, okay. This is more people than fit into Mariners Stadium.
That's a good
it's
audience.
It's on.
Yeah.
So I just got hooked. And so I think I'm officially like video blogger number 13. Because I just, you know, by trying to figure out how the heck to put video on the internet, I Love You Project.
I see it. I got it.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
So I started making videos that were just like sharing videos. And I started sharing what I was doing in my classroom with the internet. So like when I would do an art project, I would make it so, here we're watching it. Oh, this is, he was just about to get married to his wife.
Can we put it up? There it is.
Really?
Yeah.
He's closing his eyes.
And it was interesting. I shot this both on Super 8 and video at the same time.
Yeah?
Because I thought, maybe I want the film look. I wasn't sure. I was a noob. And I ended up liking the video because look at the way his head just blows out.
Yeah.
Like, it is
Yeah,
it's like his brain extends up into the atmosphere.
Yeah.
You know, you can get an animated GIF of this as well from archive.org.
Really?
Yeah.
I might put this on Google+.
Do it.
That is really interesting.
This is Michael. He's more serious.
You're not hearing any sound because there is no sound.
There's no sound.
Silent, yeah.
And that was part of it because part of the deal when I was, you know, this is art. So part of the deal was I wanted people to hear it in their head when they saw it.
Right.
So then I got hooked on
Nobody cheated
videos.
And said olive juice.
Olive juice?
Is that
what they're
thing?
Saying? Bad lip reading. Olive juice.
It's from a John Hughes movie. She says it in the car to the guy in the next car. He thinks she's saying, I love you.
Olive juice.
So then there was an interesting transition from this. where I was making videos, and I started making how-to videos for my students, and I put them on the internet. And Phil Terone of Make Magazine
Wonderful
got a hold
guy.
Of me, yeah, and he said, "Hey, can I put these up on the? We just started this,
neat.
You know. I was totally jealous of Make Magazine. I
yeah,
was like, this is so
me
cool.
too. The first time I saw it, I actually called them right away. I said, I want to make a TV show,
yeah.
because it was just so visual, so cool, so neat. It just, I had the same reaction. Like,
so,
I want to be there.
So then, Phil said, "Hey, can we put this on? Can we put this on Make?" And I was like, "Yes."
Yeah.
Because I was, you know, at that point, my self-esteem was directly tied to video views.
And that's a bad place to be. Let me try.
It's a hard ride.
Dangerous.
Having been there.
It hurts. Yeah. It hurts.
It hurts.
And one went up, and I immediately got 10,000 views. And I was like, I wonder if I do another one.
Yeah.
So I did another one, and I said, I did another one. And he said, "Oh, great. Is it okay if we just put up all of the ones we do? Why don't you do this every week?"
Okay.
So I was like,
now, what was the subject matter of these?
So like the first one was, one of the first ones that really got known was this one where I had some friends who made this deadly combat robot, and they took my phone and they killed it, like on camera, which was kind of shocking, but and dramatic.
Yeah.
And then I ended up entering the robot competition. They spent a few thousand dollars on a robot that was like Kevlar, ultralight titanium, all this kind of stuff. And I just went down to Radio Shack and got a $10 remote control car and covered it with foam. And just, I would enter the ring with these like monsters, killer thing. And I was this ladybug thing. And I would just run circles around them. And the crowd would go wild. And they couldn't kill me. And I didn't win until I won crowd favorite.
Yeah.
Because you can't beat anybody, but you can't lose either.
Right.
Yeah.
And the crowd just adored this.
It's kind
thing.
Of an argument for pacifism.
Right? It is.
It's weird. Yeah.
In the long run.
So
eventually.
They changed the rules after that.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way it is when you hack something.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so...
Fun videos. So are these... can we go see these on the Make
Yeah, set? These are all great. YouTube.com/Bree Pettis.
Yeah.
They're all there.
Fun. Fun stuff. Let's see how the cupcake is doing. Actually, we're going to do that in just a second. Check in on our MakerBot, the replicant, the latest MakerBot. We're going to find out more about how you can have a MakerBot.
Yeah.
Also about where the designs come from. Because people probably think, well, how do I don't know how to do a 3D cupcake, but you don't have to know how to do a 3D. We'll explain that in just a bit. But first, let's talk a little bit about our friends at Ford. Ford is a big participant in CES, third year running. I just did an interview, which we're going to air later, with Alan Mulally, the CEO of Ford. And I said, Alan, you know that the Detroit Auto Show is going on right now. He said, yeah. I said, I can just imagine what happened when you got the calendar for CES and you saw it was exactly the same dates as the Detroit Auto Show. He had just gotten off a plane from Detroit. He was there this morning. He was in Delhi yesterday opening a new plant there. But I'll tell you, this is what's interesting about Ford is they are absolutely a global car company. And this new 2013 Fusion that we were taking a look at, it's so cool because they can build this all over the world. They build exactly the same chassis on everywhere. And then they put, he calls them top hats, different top hats to suit the local market on top of it. And the economy of scale they get is remarkable. Also, each line can make any of the drivetrains. So they have gas, he calls it petrol, but they have gas, they have hybrid electric, they have plug-in hybrid, and they can make any of those on the same assembly line. He says 70% the same, so we just swap in the 30% drivetrain, and that economy of scale means that they can make these cars more efficiently. He said, for a long time, small car manufacture was not done in the U.S. It wasn't economical. People would do it overseas. He says, we've brought it back to the U.S. We've made it economical. And I just think this is a technology company, and I think it's a testament to the fact that while the Detroit Motor Show, Auto Show is going on right now, Ford is here at the Consumer Electronics Show showing off not only the 2013 brand new Ford Fusion, which I know I was saying I was going to get the 2012 Focus Electric. Have you seen it yet?
No, I just saw the announcement.
You got to go see it. You got to. Am I wrong, Hilton? Hilton was with us. We were shooting it. He shot the inside. It's a beautiful car, and it's plug-in hybrid, 100 miles a gallon or more. Maybe not the maybe I'll go with it. Anyway, but they also have the 2012 Ford Fiesta, the 2012 Focus. They have a lot of cars here. People are looking at them. They're looking at the inside. And most importantly, they're looking at the part I really love, which is the Ford Sync. And Alan said it. I think he took it from me. It's so you can keep your hands on the wheel and your eyes on the road. Focus on safety. You're not looking down. You're not fiddling with dials. You talk to the car. You tell it who to call, where to go, what the temperature should be. You can ask it for weather, horoscopes, sports scores, and news. But you can also tie it into your phone, and this is the newest thing. It's called AppLink, and it's an API for the Ford Sync software that allows app developers on iPhone and Android and Windows Phone and BlackBerry too to write apps that integrate into the Ford Sync, so that when you've got the phone, you don't even have to have it docked. It can be via Bluetooth. When you got the phone in the car, you talk to it. You can say, "I want play Pandora, play my classic rock station," and it plays through the car stereo. You can say, "Listen to Triangulation 37," and if you've got Stitcher on here, it will place the Stitcher will load it up, download it if you don't have it, and start playing it. It's really remarkable. They have a Twitter client called OpenBeak that will read you. Now, you can't tweet. You can't, because you're driving. Well, yeah, maybe at some point you will be able to tweet. But right now, it'll read you your tweets or your replies. I asked him, I said, how do you balance what consumers want, which is we want to be able to do everything in our car, with the needs of safety? He said, you know, we absolutely acknowledge that, and safety first. That's why none of our products require you to look at or twiddle or do anything. You keep your eyes on the road and your hands on the wheel. That's why we developed Sync, and this new Sync AppLink is really a great way to add additional features to Sync every time your phone gets upgraded. Try it right now in the 2012 Ford Fiesta. You can drive one at a Ford dealer near you, and you can also find out more on the website. All the technologies in the new Ford vehicles, including engines, simple things, like the capless fuel filler, are all online at Ford.com/technology. Ford.com/technology. We're going to go back to the Ford booth, I think, and spend some time there. There's some really cool things. You know, it's not just Ford. All the automakers are here now.
Oh, yeah.
They really realize this is, I think Ford led the way in making that cabin be something more than just, you know, something you drive in. And all of them are
that
aware
North
of
Hall
that.
Is almost entirely auto.
Yeah, Mercedes is right next to Ford. There's Audi.
Daimler had a keynote today.
Yeah. I think it's a little weird. They're putting Facebook in Mercedes, and I think this is a mistake, because how do you do it? You can send status updates and stuff by leaning over, looking at the GPS, and twiddling a dial. And it just means there's going to be more crazy Mercedes drivers on the road. I just don't think it's the right way to go. But anyway, it's very interesting to see all these companies say, look, we understand we need to get in the 21st century. Maybe someday they'll have a replicator in the car, and as you're driving. Now, is this faster breathing than the last generation?
Yeah, so the last generation, to give you some numbers, moved at 30 millimeters per second. This one moves at 40 millimeters per second. So,
it's computer controlled?
Yeah, so actually, in this case, it's running independently of a computer. There's just an SD card you pop in, you choose your file, you press go, and it makes your thing for you.
It's actually doing pretty well. We're almost to the muffin top.
you definitely can see that it is a cupcake bottom.
Yep.
It is identifiable. If you pointed that out to anyone, they would know what that was, I think.
Yeah. And it's coming right along.
And this, so what size is this cupcake? And we think it's going to take about an hour.
This is going to be like a mini cupcake. Uh-huh. So I'd say we're about halfway done.
All right.
We worked really hard on this machine. This is... we've got some major upgrades here. We actually realized, like, okay, we're going to do some economies of scale. We've got some injection molded parts where we actually got a tool. We prototyped.
Were you hand making these before?
Well, before you got them as a kit and you had to put
them
together.
You put it together. That's right.
When you bought it, you got it as a kit. Now when you get a replicator, it comes and it's almost entirely assembled. You just have to snap the thing together and you're good to go in just a few minutes.
That's what you mean. We've moved out of that Heathkit Altair.
Right. Right.
Well, I guess Altair, you could buy it assembled or non-assembled. So
The format? What's the file format for those 3D?
It's an STL file format, which is really cross-compatible with every design tool.
It's very standard.
Very standard. You know, you can use. There's some cool online tools like Tinkercad and 3DTIN that you can just log in and use them.
So you don't have to be a CAD design wizard to make stuff here. First of all, there's also people upload their designs like crazy, right? There's my head is on. Where should we go to get templates for MakerBot?
So you can go to Thingiverse.com.
Thingiverse, that's
and
right.
And Thingiverse is where MakerBot operators and the entire world goes to share their digital designs.
Right.
So you can go check out what's been uploaded today, see what's going on, and there's more stuff on Thingiverse that you can make in your lifetime.
Yeah.
So Robert Hunt has put a Twit coin on there. He actually made a bunch of them and sent them to me. And he made them with MakerBot, the original.
What thing number is that? What's the URL at the top?
It is thing number. I'm in the search mode. So let me click it, and then I'll find it. 1235.
Okay, so that's a he got in early. We're at like 15,000 things.
Are you really?
Wow.
So you're an early Twit is an early adopter.
And then you can also use Tinkercad and things like that without having a lot of experience in how to do
kids
this.
Kids can do it. In fact, I think in some ways it's easier for kids to do it than adults to get started.
Yeah, they just get it. And what a great way for kids to kind of play with spatial sense, to learn 3D. I think these are kind of useful skills.
You know what makes me happy is when kids get it and they learn how to fail. Because you'll try making something, they'll design something, they'll print it out, they'll look at it, they'll be like, this is too small, this is too big, this should be a little bit different, they'll tweak it and they'll reprint it. And then they get that iteration feeling of like, okay,
right.
I not only did I make something fresh, but I innovated
and
until I was satisfied and better.
That's cool.
And that's the kind of thing we need our kids learning how to do.
Right.
So that they can solve the problems of tomorrow. So they don't just come up against a problem and say, oh yeah, that didn't work, whatever. Right.
They couldn't figure it out.
They can try it again and again.
So, I mean, obviously this is a little bit of a toy right now. Do you get upset if I say that? Is that an inappropriate description?
Yes and no. There's engineers and industrial designers who use this. And this replaces their $100,000 machine.
I got to say, when you get to the point where you can make things of this size, you can prototype things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
I mean, you could have prototyped the iPhone 4 in there easily. So you get a sense of what it would feel like, what it would
Yeah, you can. There's actually a model of the iPhone 4 on Thingiverse if you want to download it. And you can print out a non-working but exact replica of the iPhone 4.
Apple and others do have devices like this that they can make prototypes with.
I'm sure, yeah.
Yeah. Higher end, very expensive.
But now we're seeing like indie designers and even big industrial designers that are big houses like Apple. You know, this is something an engineer can have on their desk and try out, you know, try it out a few times. They don't have to show their boss. They can try it out, look at it. And then they can go to the big machines if they want to. Or they can just show them the stuff that comes off of MakerBot. The thing that most people use it for is, I mean, most people justify the purchase because they get to be a superhero in their household.
Uh-huh.
They get to make the faucets. They get to make the shelf brackets. They get to make the shower curtain rings.
Oh, and that's why it's not a toy in that sense, because it's parts. It's things that are helping you put together your house.
Yeah. But the most popular things are the really cool
companion
cube and the companion cube.
Yeah.
We're into the frosting now.
Here we go.
So that's another thing that's new here is you have two colors. How do you do a second color? Because the PVC is clear plastic, right?
So this is ABS.
We're not using PVC yet.
Doing some tests. It's hard.
Okay.
Because it has chloride
to be
in it. When you heat it up, it releases chloride.
Dangerous.
Gas,
yeah. So ABS it melts at a relatively low temperature. Yep. It's easy to work with.
That's right.
It's safe.
And so the way we do two colors is we have two extruders, actually. So there's a left one and a right one. And the one on the right is doing red, and the one on the left is doing white. And so for the first part of this model, it did all white. So it was just using the extruder with the white in it.
Right.
And now it's switching over and doing some red. And it can do it in the same layer. It can do it in different colors.
So you could make it a pink or something by alternating.
You can't combine layers yet. Uh-huh. Although I think there's some stuff we can do in kind of in the way that that newspapers did that way of making
the
images.
Little, alternate pixels.
Yeah. I think there's some experimentation to be done there. And that's one of the great things about being open source and friendly. It's like our users are going to make that cool
they
stuff.
They do
happen.
Stuff, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you pour dye in it, and that's how you get color? Or?
So we make filament, and it starts as pellets, and then that gets poured into a machine that's about the same size as a car. And it gets heated up, and it gets squeezed out a hole.
It's extruded, yeah.
Yeah, it looks like spaghetti.
It's on a reel.
Yeah, so
like
it comes
fishing
on
line.
On a reel here.
That's how people get it when they get their.
Yeah, you order a spool. We've got 18 colors, including glow in the dark.
I see. So you have two. I can't see it, but you have two spools on the back.
Yeah, there's a red here.
There's a red spool and a white spool.
The question, both practically and not. Can you move it while it's printing? You can.
Yes, you can.
We've
actually done experiments printing upside down because we thought, could this print in space? We should try and get it up into space. And then we were like, well, let's just see if it prints upside down. And it turns out it does.
It does. No, we're getting close. And ABS is not completely non-toxic. I mean, you have to take some precautions, yes?
Yeah, we did some tests. We did some OSHA tests, and we sent it to some labs. And you would have to try really hard to hurt yourself.
Okay, good.
You would literally have to run hundreds of these in a closed environment with no...
Right. No ventilation at all.
Ventilation. Yeah. And it does off-gas a little bit, so you should always have ventilation in the room.
But and does the PLA look the same, or is it...
The PLA is clear, so it kind of looks like... this kind of looks like spaghetti. And then this looks kind of like, I don't know, clear spaghetti.
Now, that's water-soluble, right? If I threw that in the...
Rice noodles.
Rice noodles. Yeah. Very good. Yeah.
Well, this is actually, it's interesting. It will break down in an acidic environment like a compost pile. But it will actually take a really long time to break down. It will break down in water, I imagine, as well, although we haven't tried it.
Right.
But it would take a long time.
Slightly water-soluble. But not really.
Somebody's saying if you could only do it with spun sugar, then you'd have a market. We could.
One of our friends, the Evil Mad Scientist, did a 3D printer called the Candy Fab 5000. That prints things in sugar, and we've actually got a tool head that we have experimental called the Frostruder.
Yeah,
that lets you print in frosting, so you can eat your mistakes.
That's fantastic. Love that. That's what the engineer should be doing.
How hard was it to design the MakerBot? Was that a long, difficult process, or?
It literally took us 2 cases of ramen, and like 4 cases of Club Mate, which is this German caffeinated beverage that
mate?
We imported.
Yeah,
yerba mate. It turns out that ramen is not good. The kind of top ramen that you get in the package.
It's not good for you.
It's not good for you.
It's
like,
very high
literally,
sodium.
We gained like 10 pounds and felt kind of ill at the end of the at the end of our prototype. We locked ourselves in the NYC Resistor, our hacker space, and just
That's so
didn't
cool.
sleep.
Yeah.
Now, we need to close the gap. So you were making the
how'd you get to this? Yeah.
Videos for Make, and then how did you end up making the MakerBot?
So the transition there is I started NYC Resistor with some friends. I was part of a group in Seattle called HackerBot Labs, and we would get together on Saturdays and do stupidly wonderful projects, like, you know, sending cameras up into near space and stuff like this.
Seems a natural outgrowth of those videos that you were doing, right?
Yeah. And then I came to New York, and I actually went on a trip to Europe and visited all these hackerspaces. They've been really organized with, you know, computer clubs in Europe. They've been doing it since 81, so they know how to do this club thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And so ccc.de is their URL. And visited a ton. They've got it nailed. Like, every city has a hackerspace where hackers get together and hang out and make things and program together. Like, it's like instead of having their laptop in their own dark closet, they get together with a bunch of other hackers and hang out on their laptop in a dark room. So, add tools,
a walk-in closet.
Add tools to that, and you've got NYC Resistor. We bought a laser cutter and all these tools.
We want to build one in the Twit Studios. We want to build a hacker space.
You should do.
Yeah.
We got the perfect space for it.
We do. We have a roll-up door. We have an alley, so if you make anything that flames, you can put it outside. I know we're going to do this, and who knows, maybe the next generation will be built.
I look forward to those ones. Good.
So you built a prototype and started selling it right away, or?
So we'd been working on, when I started NYC Resistor, I met this guy named Zach Hoken-Smith, who co-founded MakerBot with me. And I met him, and I said, like, well, what do you make? And he says, well, I make self-replicating machines. And I was like, well, how can I help? And we started working on this project.
The
called,
machines make themselves.
Yeah. We started working on the RepRap project, which is this great project that's all about making self-replicating 3D printers. That was really fun. We did that for 2 or 3 years and developed the Zach developed the electronics for it, and I made a bunch of videos. And then we had it so it almost worked. I mean, like, literally, we had it working for a few minutes, and then the electronics let out the magic smoke.
Oh.
So we were like, okay, we've got it.
Either
working.
A new pope has been elected, or our printer is dying.
Is the smoke electronic, or white, or black?
So at that point, we knew we were onto something, and we were feeling limited by having to have a machine that was it was focused on making replicating itself. So we just wanted a machine that could make anything, rather than having to be focused on being made from itself. Right. And the other problem was, in order to have one, you had to have one. So we quit our jobs, started MakerBot. That's when we had all the ramen, and we just started prototyping. We just started, you know, when you have a laser cutter and a lot of caffeine, you can put these things together.
I know, I've seen Jerry Ellsworth at work.
Yeah.
So how many of you the originals did you have you sold?
So we
I know a lot of people who have them.
Yeah, we have 3,000 cupcakes are in the wild, which is our first model, and then we have 4,200 around 4,500. Is that right? Because we're up to 7,500.
That's amazing.
So 7,500. So about 4,500 thingamatics in the wild.
And they're about
another replicator. Man, we launched this yesterday, and like. We were on every, like, seems like every, we, our website just was crushed.
I think you could sell a lot of these, because the larger size means it's actually useful for a lot of designers and so forth.
How much? It comes assembled and put together.
Which makes it easier.
Makes it a lot, it takes that hurdle away from people. Of like, you're not going to spend 20 hours on a bunch of frustration and sweat putting this together.
How much?
It is $1,749 for single extrusion and $19.99 for dual extrusion.
And how much are the reels? How much do they cost?
About $50.
Okay. And you can make a lot with those, I would guess.
We pack a full kilogram on these reels. So.
Wow. How's the cupcake doing? It looks like it's stopped. Is it still is it still cupping?
Did I shake it?
Uh-oh. Do we have cupcake interruptus?
I might have.
Can it resume if it gets interrupted?
Let's see. Oh, yeah. I think I must have.
There it goes. Oh. It was thinking, Bree. Now you have you ever?
I won't move that for
when
the rest
you when
of the
you
program.
Did you like do you, do you don't pack that? How do you bring this to CES? You pack it in a bag.
Yeah, so we put it in boxes. One of the things we did with the cupcake, our first machine, and the Thing-O-Matic is we made it to fit into a Pelican case.
Ah, that's nice.
With this one,
I wonder what the TSA would make of that, though.
Oh, I got a story for that.
Okay.
This one we actually had to put in boxes and pack it really. We actually take the extruder off.
But it's kind of as is, so you know what it is. Yeah. You can kind of see.
Do you ship it, or did you actually?
We shipped it here.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, it's thinking.
And so, it's TSA.
Nothing to see here.
So when I arrived at I was traveling with MakerBot and I had an extra extruder because this was back in the early days when you had a sometimes it would get fussy. So I put another extruder.
You have a
on.
Spare extruder. Yes.
Yeah. So I'm going through the TSA checkpoint.
Security checkpoint.
And they run it through and the woman calls me over and she's looking real serious and she calls like some really big guys over.
Oh,
and what
dear.
Year is this?
Well, this
couple
is a couple years ago.
Okay.
And they're really big. Like, I'm tall, but these guys are, like, a couple times
bouncer
the mass
size.
Of me.
Yeah, wow.
And, you know what it's doing when it's stopping? It's changing colors.
Oh, so it's going to white.
It takes a second for it to come to new color.
Got it.
All right, so it's normal operation.
Okay, so the bouncers are coming over,
right.
And they're looking very serious. And she pulls this out of my bag, and it does, to be fair, it looks like a ray gun. She says, "What is this?" And I'm like, "Well, have you heard of MakerBot?" And I go into my spiel and give them all cards. And then at the end, they kind of shift from looking really frowny face and serious to like, "Oh, how big of things can you make with that?" And at that point, I'm like, "Boom!"
Yes.
And so then I actually pulled them at the end. I said, "Okay, how many of you would want one of these?" And 4 out of 5 TSA employees want.
Who
to make
wouldn't
four
want?
Out of five
who wouldn't want a replicant? In their home.
You know, that is an interesting problem because you can't just say, oh, it's a 3D printer, because they'll be like, what are you talking about? You have to explain the whole concept to them. But they got it,
did.
That's great. Fantastic.
Well, Bree, what's next for MakerBot Industries? Where would you like to go with this?
Our big push this year, and it'll be the push for both 2012, 2013, is to get these in kids' hands. I mean, because I'm a former teacher. Education is baked into the DNA of MakerBot.
Every high school should have a replicator.
One MakerBot per school.
I think that's absolutely
true. I think that makes
true.
Sense.
We have at Petaluma High School, there's a wonderful AutoCAD class.
Awesome.
A teacher who really cares. He's teaching the kids. Imagine how cool it would be for these kids to make designs. And then, you know, sometimes they'll bring them down to the machine shop. We have benches out front of our studio that were made by the high school because the AutoCAD kids designed them.
Nice.
In fact, I think it was Alex Gumpel's class that designed. Wasn't it Alex's class? Yeah, who designed them. And then this machine shop made them. But what if they had a replicator? Just
yeah,
imagine.
Now we're talking.
It would be great if, because you want the school to want the thing and know how to take advantage of it. It'd be great if schools could sign up to indicate, like, yeah, we'd like to have one, and then people could actually buy them for the schools.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
We've got, if you go to curriculum.makerbot.com, we've got some absurdly cool curriculum for teachers to use in their classroom. And we've actually, I'm not sure if we published this yet, but if you email us, we'll send it to you. We've got some letters for both students to give to their teachers and for teachers to give to their principals and for principals to give to their district.
Brilliant.
To kind of like, because we did a bunch of research and we went through. So when when you use this curriculum, you can actually tie it directly to national learning standards. And this is one of those things that teachers have had to do over the last 10 years, is they've had to teach to the test.
Right.
And it sucks for them.
Oh, yeah.
But
they hate it.
One of the things that we did that made it easy is we went through and we said, okay, if your school is not doing so good in these standards, this is how a MakerBot can help. So you can get a MakerBot, put it in your classroom, and address these type of learning styles and these type of academic learning standards.
Hey, you got like six lesson plans here?
I'm gonna buy one of these for our high school.
Good.
I just decided this would be a great gift.
That's a great idea.
I wanted to say the Leo Laporte Memorial Replicant. And I want a bust of me on top of it.
Well, not a replica. You're not printing out people.
Why not?
You can print out people.
Yeah.
Andrew Main on Twitter wants me to ask you to make him a girlfriend, any color. It doesn't matter.
You got red or white. That's your, there you go. Or green.
Very weird science.
Yes. Weird things.
Do you imagine making bigger, more elaborate, specialized, that kind of thing? Or?
I mean, I want to make a MakerBot that we send to the moon that makes the moon base for us. That's where I see this.
That's where it is going, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, really, ultimately, when you say replicator, what you really want it to be is something that can make anything.
Yeah.
And so, that's not that far-fetched.
Yeah, we should have one of these. I mean, I would also love to see one on the International Space Station. Mm-hmm. Like, how do they solve problems when they're up there? They have to literally
they
be like...
They have to make parts.
It's a long delivery time when you're on the space station.
Yeah.
They should have one of these.
Absolutely.
Is the material a problem? I mean, you can't make these out of aluminum. You can't do this out of aluminum. You need to have plastics, I guess.
You know, if they wanted to put one on the space shuttle, I'd water jet one out of aluminum.
You could do a water jet.
Not a problem.
Sure you could. What was I thinking? So cool. Reed Pettis, you're one of the nicest guys in the world, and it's always fun to see a nice guy succeed. I just think this is, I'm just thrilled for you. When I saw you at CES 2 years ago, I thought, they made it. They made it. That's really big time. That's really awesome.
Thank you, Leo. It's a pleasure to be on the show, hanging out with you guys, talking shop.
People want to know more, they go to
MakerBot.com.
MakerBot.com, very easy. BOT, MakerBot. MakerBot. And remember, 4 out of 5 TSA agents would buy one. And that's really all you need to know. The cupcake continues. You know, we should just focus a camera at that and let it run.
It's getting there.
Yeah. Doesn't that look good? Good enough to eat? Don't you want one?
One of the nice things about this red plastic is
it looks
this
delish.
Is a MakerBot thing. Like, we're like, can we put UV reactive dyes in the plastic? Let's find out.
Let's see what happens.
Sure enough, you can. And, you know, kind of it really pops in sunlight. And, you know, if you're going to a rave, you can make some things that'll glow under black light.
That glows under the red?
The red will glow under black light.
Glows,
And we're like, can we make glow-in-the-dark plastic? And we're like, let's try it. So that's the MakerBot way. It's like, let's try it out. Let's see what we can do.
Some of the cooler things on Thingiverse are glow-in-the-dark. I've noticed that. Yeah.
And forget those other guys. The Cubify, is that what they're called? Yeah, forget them. Forget them. Go with Brie. Go with the TSA-approved MakerBot. But it is kind of cool that there are other people doing this and making
it
possible.
You know, it shows that we're in it, the industry is beginning.
It is. I think that's exactly it.
And we get to lead the charge and see what we can get done. And it's.
I think that's exactly it.
We're going to have fun, and we're not just making a product. We're out to change the world and empower people to be absurdly creative and have a great time and make things that they need. I mean, when the apocalypse comes this year.
Yeah,
we'll be ready.
In December,
you're going to be ready.
Yeah,
we'll be ready.
Print your way out of it.
Brie Pettis, MakerBot.com. We do triangulation every Wednesday, normally at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern time on twit.tv, but we're here at CES, and we thought, hey, we got Brie. We can pin him down. We got to get the MakerBot out here and the replicant. And it was perfect timing because you have a brand new one to show everybody. So we're glad you could do it. I know there were some difficulties during the live stream, but we, of course, will make a full, high-quality, high-def 3D version available on our website, twit.tv. We do audio and video of this show. You can also find it on iTunes and everywhere podcasts are. Do subscribe to Triangulation because every week we interview somebody who's really top of the line, top-notch, interesting, great minds.
Yeah.
And all
it's one of the most fun shows we do.
Yeah. It is the most fun show. I love it. Thanks to Ford for sponsoring the show. I actually have to take off. Do you want to continue to hold down the fort here at the Twit Sky Booth?
Yes, absolutely.
All right, I think we got some people who are going to come by, show off some stuff, and a lot more. We'll be back tomorrow Somebody's saying it's Tuesday. I know it is. We do the show normally on Wednesday.
That's why you said normally.
It's Tuesday today. We know that. I think I know that. Tomorrow we start at what time?
10 o'clock.
10 a.m. with?
Products,
just products, products, products. That's the
CES Live.
The parade of products. So come back 10 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. or sorry, 1 p.m. Eastern, and we'll do more of this. What else should I tell you? Oh, our schedule, our full schedule is on inside.twit.tv. And I'm stalling because I want the cupcake to finish, but it's not going to probably.
We've got another 15 minutes.
Is it doing the little hostess curly cue on the top now?
Yes.
I love it. Thank you, Bree.
It's a pleasure being here, gentlemen.
Thanks so much. Thank you, Tom. Thank you all for joining us on Triangulation.